Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly. And before we dive into today's episode, I want to let you know that this episode is going to be available in video format. So if you prefer to watch these stories be told with pictures and video, just to get that extra detail and know who we're talking about, then you can find the videos on YouTube or patreon.com/mamamystery. Now, as some of you may know, I am from the Kansas City area. I was born and raised in Shawnee, which is a suburb of Kansas City, but I grew up with the Chiefs on in the background, even when they really weren't shit for a team. So naturally, when I learned that Travis Kelce was dating none other than the global superstar Taylor Swift, I was excited for what that meant for our city, and especially our economy and our small business owners. We've had a lot of smaller shops that are small businesses that Taylor has actually sought out for some of her game day wear. And so I think that's a really cool thing that she's done. But I will say I'm not actually a Swiftie by any means. I just don't really listen to a lot of music. But my daughter does love her. And it was always kind of surreal to see Taylor Swift at these games at Arrowhead, at a place I've been to numerous times. And it was pretty cool to see her walk in, greet fans, take pictures with some of the little girls there, and enjoy the game from Travis's suite. But at the first game after Charlie Kirk got shot, things changed pretty drastically. This time, when Taylor got there, instead of greeting and smiling for cameras, employees brought in this makeshift bulletproof wall panel thing on wheels, and they stretched it out and then rolled it as she walked behind it, completely blocking literally any trace of her from any view. You can't even see her shoes. And I, like many others, thought maybe it was because of the Charlie Kirk shooting. Maybe she was scared for her safety after seeing how Charlie was shot in a public space in broad daylight. But come to find out, the real reason is somehow even scarier than that. So Brian Jason Wagner is a 45-year-old man from Colorado who allegedly showed up at Taylor's house in LA numerous times beginning in July of 2024 and continuing into May. Taylor said in a court filing, quote, "I am informed that Mr. Wagner made various statements about living at my property, not true, being in a relationship with me, not true, believing I am the mother of his son, not true, and needing to see me in person, all of which are untrue and disconnected from reality," end quote. Now, Taylor has faced numerous stalkers over the years. In 2017, 29-year-old Mohammed Jafar was sent to a psychiatric facility in New York after he made dozens of calls to Taylor Swift's management company and then entered her Tribeca apartment building. In 2018, Roger Alvarado broke into Taylor's home, used her shower, and slept in her bed. He was in jail for 9 months and then sentenced to a longer term after another break-in. The same year, Julius Sandrock was arrested after traveling more than 1,000 miles to Taylor Swift's home with ammunition, a knife, rope, and gloves found in his car. Six other people were convicted of stalking Swift in the following years, including an incident in 2020 in which a man crashed his car into her apartment building and attempted to gain entry. In June of this year, Taylor was able to get a TRO against Brian Jason Wagner, and in September, the restraining order was granted its full effect for 5 years. But it's worth noting, Brian was not at that court hearing, so private investigators tried to track him down, and to this day, they have not been able to do so. So naturally, this puts Taylor Swift and her whole team on high alert because a man who is completely disconnected from reality, claiming that Taylor is the mother of his son, who does exist, by the way, he has a son, and he's claiming Taylor Swift is his mother, but he's sneaking into her home. Like, this is a very threatening and frightening situation. But here's the thing about stalkers. They don't just target celebrities. We hear about cases like Taylor's because she's famous, but the truth is, stalking happens every day to people who are not in the spotlight. It's not always a fan turned obsessed or some stranger on the internet. Sometimes it's someone close to the victim, someone that they thought that they could trust at one point in their life. And just like Taylor's team is now on high alert for a man that they cannot find, there are cases where everyday people are left to fend for themselves against someone just as unhinged. So today's story is about a woman named Christiel Krug, a wife, a mom, someone who wasn't a global superstar, but still found herself at the center of a nightmare with a man who just would not let go. And the similarities to what we've just talked about, the stalking, the threats, the feeling of being hunted, are chilling. This is the story of Christiel Krug. Christiel Grimsrud Krug was a 43-year-old mother of three living in the peaceful suburbs of Broomfield, Colorado. She was known as a remarkable woman, a talented modern dancer with a brilliant mind for science. In college, Christiel earned a degree in biochemical engineering and went on to build a successful 19-year career at Agilent Technologies as a project manager. She and her husband, Daniel Krug, had married in 2007 and built a life together in the upscale Anthem neighborhood, raising their three children, two girls and a boy, ages 14, 11, and 8. This neighborhood, to give you a picture of what it looks like, it's a fairly new development with views of the Rocky Mountains, parks located throughout this community. There's a trail system, two amenity centers, creeks, a beautifully manicured landscaping. It's an upscale neighborhood with homes in the upper six figures and into the seven figures. So not a place where you might expect a story like this, right? By all appearances, the Krugs were a normal, happy family. While Christiel worked at Agilent, Daniel worked for the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And as I said, they shared three children who were 14, 11, and 8 in 2023 when this story takes place. In the fall of 2023, an insidious threat invaded their lives, one that no one in their quiet community ever saw coming. In October of 2023, Christiel began receiving a series of strange and disturbing text messages. The messages came in the form of emails and texts from someone that was claiming to be an old boyfriend of Christiel's, a man from 20 years ago whom she hadn't been in touch with in ages. And at first, it seemed like a bizarre blast from the past. Why would a former flame suddenly resurface after two decades? But it didn't take long for his tone to quickly become harassing and obsessive. The messages were laced with crude language and unwelcome advances, and some took direct aim at Christiel's husband, Daniel, calling him her loser husband. There were messages like, quote, "I go to Boulder every few weeks and thought we could hook up. You game? You don't want him. I know you want me." Another chilling message promised, "I'll get rid of him and then we can be together," suggesting that this mystery man was willing to harm Daniel to win Christiel back. Another said, "This your husband? He needs to drive safe. Your license plate expired. Gotta fix that." From a text that was accompanied by a photo of Daniel near his vehicle, a little too close for comfort. And the sender seemed to know where they lived because he would say things like, "You don't belong in that big house. You belong with me. I'll get rid of him and then we can be together." Then the email started. Some said things like, "I know how to satisfy you. I'll do it for us. Help me get rid of him. Then we can be together just like you want. You don't want him. I know you want me. And I know he's stopping you from talking to me." So Christiel was alarmed and confused. The ex-boyfriend in question was someone that she had dated around the early 2000s, and according to what she later told police, he had sporadically tried to contact her in the years since, in 2002, 2005, 2010, and 2016, all with unwanted propositions. However, she had never responded to those advances, and he would always go quiet when she ignored him. She never felt the need to report those past interactions, but now, in 2023, the tone of his messages had turned menacing. It felt like he was everywhere, constantly watching her. In late October, Christiel received an email that included a photo taken of her own car parked outside of a dentist's office, proof that whoever was messaging her had followed her to this appointment. Another email included a snapshot of her husband Daniel stepping out of his car at work as if a stalker had been lurking in wait to capture that moment. As the disturbing messages continued, Christiel's anxiety only mounted. It truly seemed that a relentless stalker was hunting her. By late October of 2023, Christiel was so frightened that she went to the Broomfield Police Department to report the harassment. She told officers she believed the culprit was her ex-boyfriend from 2 decades ago, given that the emails were coming in under his name and referenced their past. The police took her complaint seriously. After one particularly threatening message on November 13th, which spoke of getting rid of Daniel, officers actually performed a well check on Daniel at his workplace and on Christelle at home just to ensure the family's safety. Christelle's life quickly became consumed by dread. According to case documents, she grew, quote, very fearful for her safety and the safety of her family, suffering severe emotional distress from the constant terror. She became hyper-vigilant, carrying a concealed handgun everywhere for protection. She even enrolled in firearm safety courses. At home, Christelle installed a network of security cameras inside and outside the house as an extra safeguard. Her entire family, including the 3 young children, were aware of this supposed stalker, and they were all living on edge because of it. Broomfield police increased their vigilance, even going undercover to surveil the Krug's neighborhood, hoping to catch the stalker lurking in the shadows. But despite these efforts, the menacing messages just kept coming. The unknown sender seemed to always be one step ahead, tormenting Christelle with vulgar taunts, surveillance photos, and even what police later described as explicit advertisements online, attempts to publicly harass or humiliate her. And through all of this, Daniel Krug was ostensibly a concerned husband. Outwardly, he and Christelle were united against this strange threat, but privately, the stress was taking a toll on their marriage. In truth, the relationship between Daniel and Christelle had been crumbling. Family members would later reveal that the couple had been planning to divorce. Christelle no longer wanted to be with Daniel. By late 2023, their marriage was all but over, a fact that Christelle confided to at least one relative. Christelle herself even began to feel that something about this stalker scenario did not add up. In the days before her death, she voiced to her mother that she wondered if someone closer to home might actually be behind the frightening messages. And as one prosecutor later put it, she was putting the pieces together, and her husband was running out of time. Have you ever felt like no matter how much you rest, you're still just running on empty? Fatigue, brain fog, even brittle nails, those can all be signs of iron deficiency. And here's the thing, iron deficiency is way more common than people realize. It affects about 1 in 3 adults, especially women, and traditional iron supplements usually don't cut it. They're hard to absorb, and they often leave you dealing with nausea, constipation, or a metallic-y taste. That's why I recommend Citerol from Pharmanutra. Citerol is a premium iron supplement made with patented sucrosomial technology, which basically wraps the iron in a protective shield so your body can absorb it 3 to 4 times better than standard iron. And the best part is it's gentle on the stomach. There's no nausea, no constipation, and no metallic taste. Citerol has been clinically studied, over 150 published studies, in fact, and it's trusted by more than 2 million people worldwide. It's Italy's number one supplement brand and is finally available here in the U.S. Just one capsule a day with water anytime, with or without food, and you're good to go. So if you're nodding along because you're exhausted, foggy, or just tired of feeling tired, this could be exactly what you've been missing. Head to pharmanutra-us.com and use the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, for 10% off your first order of Citerol. That's pharmanutra-us.com with the code MAMA, M-A-M-A, for 10% off today. Have you heard of Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth? It's the supplement designed to help women maintain optimal hormone levels. With more than 50,000 glowing reviews worldwide and 98% of women saying that they would recommend it to their friends and family, it's clear why it's such a fan favorite. And now you can take those results even further with their prebiotic collagen protein. This product is all about supporting your gut health, which directly impacts your hormones. When your gut is in balance, it can really amplify the benefits of Hormone Harmony. So here's what it helps with. It helps with relieving occasional bloating and gas, check. Reducing sugar cravings so you feel satisfied longer, definitely need that. Supporting healthy, sustainable weight management, which is something I have always struggled with. And boosting energy and supporting general well-being. Again, I think all moms can probably relate to basically all of those symptoms. But personally, I've noticed that adding prebiotic collagen protein to my routine made a big difference. It's given me more energy during the day and just an overall feeling of balance. Like I'm not on this wild roller coaster of hormonal imbalance. And what I really like about Happy Mammoth is their commitment to quality. Their products are inspired by nature, but backed by science, and they never cut corners. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and hormone harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, at checkout. Just go to happymammoth.com and use the code MAMA for 15% off today. The terror that had been simmering for weeks finally boiled over on the morning of December 14th, 2023. That day began like many others for the Krug family. Around 7:30 a.m., Christelle did the usual morning routine of getting her kids ready for school and driving two of them to their elementary and middle schools. Daniel normally would have left for work by then. His job was actually in Glendale, which is a suburb in Denver. But on this morning, Daniel hadn't left at his usual time. In fact, when Christelle returned home after the school drop-off, which was shortly before 8 a.m., she was surprised to find Daniel still at home. It was unusual enough that she commented on it, asking why he was running late. Daniel mumbled that he just wasn't feeling well, blaming unexplainable stomach trouble for the delay. Moments later, as Christelle entered the garage of their house to presumably head back inside, someone was lying in wait for her in the garage. In an instant, Christelle was ambushed from behind by a brutal attacker. She was struck hard on the back of the head, not once, but at least twice, with a blunt object. The blows were severe, intended to incapacitate her. Christelle, a licensed concealed carry gun owner, had her handgun on her person for safety, but she never even got a chance to draw it. The sudden attack was so swift and so unexpected that she couldn't defend herself. Stunned and bleeding from the head, Christelle collapsed near the steps inside the family's garage. The assailant then delivered the final, fatal wound, a single thrust of a knife directly into Christelle's chest that pierced her heart. It was a vicious and personal killing. Later, investigators would note that the blood splatter in the garage, a smear of bright red on a drywall near where she fell, told the tale of this violent struggle. By the time it was over, Christelle lay on her back in the corner of the garage, mortally wounded. The killer then fled the scene, leaving Christelle dying on the cold garage floor. And in the immediate aftermath, all was quiet in the Krug household. No neighbor heard any disturbance that morning, and Christelle's three children were safely at school, oblivious to the nightmare that was unfolding at home. The only other person known to be at home around that time was Daniel. And by 8:24 a.m., surveillance footage would later show him finally leaving the house for work, roughly 30 minutes later than normal. Unbeknownst to anyone else, the murderer had likely just slipped away, but at that moment, it wasn't yet clear to authorities that a murder had even occurred. It would take a few hours before anyone realized that something was terribly wrong at the Krug house. Around midday on December 14th, after several hours of radio silence from Christelle, Daniel Krug did something that initially seemed like the act of a worried husband. Shortly after noon, he attempted to text and call Christelle and got no response. So at approximately 12:20 p.m., Daniel called the Broomfield police and requested a welfare check on his wife, saying that he hadn't been able to reach her for about 3 hours. Officers promptly arrived at the Krug home on Promontory Loop at 12:28 p.m. to check on Christelle. They found the house locked and quiet, peering through a window into the garage, and officers' eyes fell onto a grisly scene. A woman's body sprawled out on the garage floor with what appeared to be blood visible on the wall nearby. The officers forced entry and rushed to Christelle's aid. Christelle had no pulse, but her body was still warm, indicating the attack had happened only a short time before their arrival. First responders attempted CPR and rushed her to the hospital, but it was far too late. At 12:43 p.m., Christelle Krug was pronounced dead. The vibrant mother of three was gone. Detectives immediately began processing the scene and gathering information. And given Christine's recent reports, all eyes turned to the mysterious stalker who had been threatening her for a few weeks at this point. It really wasn't that long. It was only 6 to 8 weeks, maybe a couple months, that the stalker had been taunting her. And here was a woman who just weeks earlier had begged police for help, convinced that this ex-boyfriend turned stalker wanted to harm her. And now she was dead under violent and suspicious circumstances. It was a scenario ripped straight from a thriller. Had Christine's former lover really shown up to make good on his threats? Meanwhile, Daniel was distraught, and in his initial statement to police, he pointed the finger squarely at his wife's ex-boyfriend.
What's your guys' interactions been like leading up to this? I felt like she was keeping secrets. All I she didn't tell me about the command. She keeps disappearing for hours.
What?
When this was tough, we should divorce.
I don't want to divorce her.
I told you she can't keep secrets. What did she say when you told her?
He recounted the harassment that Christine had been experiencing and suggested that this unhinged ex must have broken in and killed her. Investigators treated this theory seriously at first because, if true, it meant that a dangerous killer, one who had been brazenly stalking the family, was now on the loose. However, as officers combed through the crime scene, certain details didn't quite fit the outside stalker scenario. For one, there were no signs of forced entry anywhere. No broken locks, no shattered windows, nothing to indicate that an intruder had violently forced his way into their home. In fact, the house's security system, which Christine had been so careful about arming, had been turned off that morning. Investigators discovered that the system had been disabled at 8:15 a.m., and shockingly, it was done via Christine's own phone. This suggested that whoever attacked her either knew her security passcode or had access to her phone right around the time of the murder. Even more telling was what police found and didn't find on the home surveillance cameras. Remember those cameras that I told you about that Christine installed as protection? When detectives checked the footage, they found nothing at all during the critical time frame. Three of the cameras that normally monitored the property had been offline for much of the morning. And the camera in the garage, which might have captured the attack, had its lens obscured with a piece of blue masking tape. Officers peeled the tape off the garage camera, perplexed. How would a random ex-boyfriend stalker know how to navigate Christine's home security and then stealthily disable the cameras? Another clue then emerged. The supposed ex-boyfriend in question was quickly tracked down by police. He turned out to be living in Eagle Mountain, Utah, about 8 hours away from Broomfield. When contacted, this man provided an ironclad alibi. Not only had he not left Utah, but records and witnesses confirmed that he was at home with his own wife during the time of the killing. Furthermore, investigators checked the ex's devices and found zero evidence that he had sent any of those messages to Christine in October or November. The entire stalking campaign, it appeared, had been a phantom. Within days, detectives definitively ruled out the ex-boyfriend as a suspect. He was simply an innocent man who had been dragged unknowingly into this sinister plot. With the ex-boyfriend eliminated as a suspect, all signs were now pointing inward, back toward the one person who supposedly had the most to lose if Christine left him, Daniel Krug.
Because I'm going to throw this idea out there. Right? You know
Anthony has reached out to her in the past, number of times.
She's been very open about that, yes.
Right. The last time was 2016-ish. He had asked her at one point if she wanted to have.
I think he's approached her multiple times.
Right. So this next time, if there's any bit of question about infidelity, whether it's with Anthony or anybody else, we might create an account to see if we can create a facade or see if Christine's actually interested in Anthony. So we ask her and push the bounds a little bit and see if that will confirm our suspicions of infidelity. You don't get the response and the openness you once did for about 28 days, from October 2nd to October 31st. So you amp it up a little bit. Send a photo of yourself to her, an account you created. See what her response is.
I mean, the IT department, in fact, I can go check on where we're at with those records, but a lot of this stuff is going to shine through. But my hope is just that we can at least be honest about those things and agree that maybe this started out the way that it was reported, and then maybe it turned into something different.
Yeah. Is that what suggests? That I would put my children through this. We were drilling the kids on what to do if we said run. That they had to pair up, they had to run. I'm looking into counseling for the kids. Figure out when the heck to start that. I get the narrative you're putting together, but it alleges that I would do this to my children. I love and adore my children.
You're afraid to lose time with them if you get the divorce.
Well, provide us a different explanation then. We know it's not Kickman. If you were watching these facts unfold in front of you in a movie, what would you say happened?
There has to be someone
that was able to turn off the cameras, that was able to access a password-protected system to turn off cameras, that was able to use your IP address from your work to create accounts, to send messages and photos, to act as a stalking suspect. Well, tell me. Help me make sense of it.
I don't know. I'm not the one who does this. I'm analytical at work. And I read and write fiction at home. I don't do crime drama. I don't know what that is. Is
Kickman is 6.5 hour drive from here. There's no way he could have made that drive. If he flew, we would have record of that that doesn't show up on any sort of flight record through the FBI, DEA, Homeland Security, anything like that. And then, in fact, he was contacted in his house severely intoxicated.
All this time that we've been looking for him, for the protection, and you just found him today, like that?
I've been looking at you, but I've been waiting for these records to come back.
We've been chasing the wrong dog.
You're under arrest. Is it? It sounds like you're accusing me. We have a lot of information that points your direction, and we were hoping that you could provide a legitimate explanation other than it wasn't me.
The Broomfield Police Department launched an exhaustive investigation, and the evidence that they uncovered painted a jaw-dropping picture of betrayal and premeditation. It turned out that the person terrorizing Christine all those weeks was not a long-lost ex at all. It was her own husband, Daniel. Digital forensics provided the first big break. Detectives traced the IP addresses of the fake emails that had been tormenting Christine. The electronic trail did not lead to some far-flung location or unknown device. It led right back to Daniel Krug's workplace. In fact, one of the bogus email accounts used by the stalker had been created on a secure password-protected network at Daniel's job, which was the state health department. It's a government job. How stupid can you be? That was a smoking gun that someone with Daniel's credentials and access had set up the fake account. Investigators also dug into the phone records and discovered that the burner phones used to send anonymous texts to Christine had a connection to Daniel. Those disposable phones were purchased with a Visa gift card registered to Daniel himself. Even more damning, cell tower data showed that one of those burner phones frequently moved in tandem with Daniel's personal cell phone, pinging in the same locations at the same times as he did, as if he was carrying both phones on him at the same time. Investigators then looked at Daniel's activities around the time of the murder, and the pieces all fell into place. They found that on the very morning of December 14th, Daniel had attempted a high-tech cover-up to go along with the brutal killing. Using Christine's unlocked phone, he sent himself a series of pre-written text messages from her number, messages designed to make it seem like Christine was still alive and texting after he had left the house. He timed these messages to send around 8:56 a.m. that morning after he had driven away so that he could later show police or others, "See, she was alive when I left. She even texted me." Indeed, at 8:56 a.m., Daniel's phone received the very text that he had covertly queued up from Christine's device. Of course, the investigators later confirmed that Christine's phone never actually sent anything after 8:22 a.m., meaning those scheduled texts were fabricated and did not involve any live typing by Christine. Daniel had also used her phone at 8:15 to turn off the security system, as noted, and he'd physically placed that blue tape over the doorbell camera to prevent the crime from being caught on video. He left the house around 8:24 a.m., finally heading into work after committing this heinous murder, and even deactivated his car's dash cam on the way, likely to avoid creating any recording of his slightly delayed departure. Once he was at work, he tried to act completely normal. He arrived at 9:27 a.m., sat at his desk, and later made those calls to Christine and the police at noon as a seemingly concerned husband. It was an audacious attempt to construct an alibi. When police confronted Daniel with the mounting evidence, he had little in the way of a convincing explanation. He was arrested on December 16th, just 2 days after Christine's death, and charged with first-degree murder, 2 counts of stalking, and criminal impersonation. The arrest affidavit contained a litany of incriminating details. For instance, investigators had uncovered Daniel's Google search history from the day before the killing. In a chilling display of foresight, Daniel had searched things like, when is a head injury a cause for concern? How hard would you have to hit someone in the head to make them unconscious? And how long can you be unconscious without brain damage? As this twisted truth came out, friends and neighbors were stunned. The entire stalking episode had been a ruse, a diabolical ploy by Daniel to terrorize Christine and set up an innocent man, being her ex-boyfriend, as this fall guy. His motive, allegedly, prosecutors would argue that Daniel could not handle the impending divorce and loss of control over his wife. by faking a stalker, he aimed to keep Christelle scared and possibly dependent, and then ultimately to kill her and point police to this convenient suspect that he had arranged for only a few weeks. Imagine that. The depth of manipulation was horrifying. He had not only brutalized and murdered his wife, but for months he toyed with her psyche, making her and even their children live in fear, and even dragging an unrelated person's name through the mud. When Daniel Krug finally went on trial in the Broomfield County District Court in April of 2025, the story that unfolded was almost too bizarre to believe. Over a 2.5-week trial, prosecutors laid out the whole twisted saga for the jury. The fake stalker scheme, the high-tech cover-up, and the cold-blooded murder. Christelle's mother testified about how her daughter had installed cameras and even suspected Daniel might be behind the harassment in the end. The forensic experts walked through the digital evidence pinpointing Daniel's devices and accounts as the source of the threatening messages. They explained how the ex-boyfriend in Utah was completely exonerated. The jury heard about Daniel's failed alibi and his internet searches and on how to knock someone unconscious. They were even shown evidence that Christelle's loaded handgun was found on her body, a poignant detail indicating that she never saw her killer as a threat in time to defend herself. Daniel's defense attorney tried to sow doubt. His lawyer argued that there was no physical evidence directly tying Daniel to the act. Indeed, none of Daniel's DNA was found under Christelle's nails or at the scene, and no blood was discovered on the clothes that he wore that day. The defense suggests that the police had been so convinced of Daniel's guilt that they had neglected other leads. They pointed out that a bit of unknown DNA was found on the adhesive tape from the camera, insinuating that it could belong to some unidentified intruder. They even criticized the police for not dusting Christelle's phone for fingerprints to independently prove that Daniel had used it. Daniel himself pleaded not guilty and sat quietly as his attorney insisted the investigation was bungled and that perhaps the real stalker was still at large. But in the face of overwhelming evidence, these arguments fell flat. Every aspect of the crime, from the elaborate cyberstalking to the precision of the killing, pointed back to Daniel Krug and only Daniel Krug. It didn't take long for the 12 jurors to see through his lies. And after a full day of deliberations, the verdict came down guilty on all counts. In mid-April 2025, the Broomfield jury convicted 44-year-old Daniel Krug of first-degree murder, both stalking charges, and criminal impersonation. The following day, April 18th, Judge Priscilla Lowe formally sentenced him. By law, a first-degree murder conviction in Colorado carries a mandatory sentence of life in prison with no possibility of parole, which is exactly what Daniel received. Additionally, the judge tacked on 9.5 extra years for the stalking and impersonation felonies to be served consecutively. Daniel Krug will spend the rest of his life behind bars for the calculated murder of his own wife. While justice was served in the courtroom, the damage Daniel caused can never be undone. Three innocent children lost their mother in the most horrifying way, and then effectively lost their father to prison in the aftermath. In the wake of Christelle's death, her children went to live with other family members. By early 2024, word spread of their situation, how the kids had to relocate and were sleeping in makeshift bedrooms in their relatives' home. The local community, heartbroken by this tragedy, rallied to support them. One Colorado couple, Lonnie and Skylar Haskell, who had been neighbors of the Krugs, decided to do something beautiful for the children. The Haskells learned that the kids didn't have proper bedrooms yet, so they volunteered to remodel and design dream bedrooms for all three of Christelle's children in their new guardian's house. The Haskells gathered the kids' input on themes and decor, hoping to create personal spaces that could be a refuge amid all of the upheaval. The community's kindness was a bright spot in an otherwise really dark story. Neighbors also mourned the vibrant woman that they had known. Christelle's friends and family remember her as successful, driven, loving, and inspiring, a woman who balanced artistic passion with scientific acumen, and a devoted mother who always, always put her kids first. An obituary written by her loved ones described how Christelle's promising journey was cut short by a senseless act of violence, and just how profoundly she will be missed. Today, Daniel sits in prison for life, and the only stalking he will experience are the ghosts of his own making and maybe a few inmates looking to make him their bitch. And I love that for him. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. And if you're not already, make sure you hit that follow or subscribe button so that you never miss a future episode of Mama Mystery. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode or watching, if that's what you chose to do. Stay curious, stay vigilant. Mama Mystery out.